Now on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville, it's time for the only area radio show devoted exclusively to football. That is to say, soccer.
Local, MLS, Premier League, and international.
It's Blokes on the Bench, and you can reach us at 434-284-9470 or at facebook.com/blokesonthebench. Now here's your host, Andy Richardson.
All right, Charlottesville, how's it going this weekend? I'm Andy.
We got Alex here.
I'm Daniel.
And I'm Christian.
And, yeah, we haven't had any Premier League soccer for 2 weeks.
I've been in withdrawal, personally.
14 days or 336 hours of no Premier League action.
You've been counting down.
I've been counting it down. So, this weekend, the hype of the weekend was the first game, of course, the North London Derby. Unfortunately, Mark is not here to gloat about his Arsenal victory.
It's so sad. It really is.
So we just have to pass it over to Alex to feel sorry for himself. Yeah. I'll leave it over to you, Alex.
Unfortunately, I don't have anyone to really just make fun of me at all.
We'll pick up that ball.
Oh, how kind.
Yeah, we could rub it in if you want.
Spurs came in as the favorites against Arsenal, and I think if you listen to any major pundit, really anyone, everyone was saying Spurs were going to win. Spurs win. Ended up Arsenal winning 2-0. They came out on the front foot. I thought Arsenal looked fantastic to start off. For me, I think it started before the game even began, though. Anderweireld being injured. We saw the hamstring injury in the last game. That meant Dyer had to go to the back. That's a big loss for us. He's out till at least Christmas, they say. We're missing our best defender. That's going to be, you know, that's going to be tough for us no matter what. And we looked like we were missing our best defender. I think that there was so much pressure coming out for Arsenal. They had possession. They had all the chances. It wasn't like they scored on, like, an off chance. It was, I mean, they were dominating the match at that point. It was a question of when they were going to score, not if they were going to score, in my eyes.
Yeah, the thing that was disappointing, though, is I understand Alderweireld's out, so defense is going to be a problem. I was just disappointed with the way Spurs, the lack of attack, the lack of... they just didn't. It was weird. It was a well contested game, and it had all the intensity of a North London derby. But Spurs just weren't as sharp as I expected them to be offensively.
I agree with that, and I think that there's two major injuries that are out there. Obviously, I don't think Kane is 100% yet. I think I think we're taking it for granted to say that he's 100%. And Dele Alli is definitely not 100%. They took him out at about 70 minutes. Which he never comes out. He's the last guy off the pitch because he is the youngest, fittest guy out there. They took him off because of the concern of what's going on with him. And so I think that when you have 2/3 of your strike force injured, and Eriksen coming off of really one of the best weeks of his life for Denmark, you know, maybe you thought that he could pick up the pace, pick up the difference. I mean, he had a nice shot that hit the post. There were a few chances here and there that Tottenham had even before Arsenal scored, but most of that was on the counter, and really the chances were few and far between. It was mostly Arsenal, to say what I don't want to say, which is just dominating.
Yeah, but Arsenal came out like as if they looked, like there was something to that team. Like, they were angry. There was a fierceness to them.
And I think Christian said it right. You were messaging it. Like, that crowd was into it.
Yeah, that's the first Premier League match I've watched in a while that the crowd seemed on.
Bang for blood or
something?
Yeah,
they were there for a show. And both teams came out and really gave them a great show as the match started. But you could see Arsenal played Spurs like they typically play Manchester City, which is like we owe them money. And it was good to see. I think there was a lot of talk this week about how, as you mentioned, that Spurs are definitely going to win this match, and I think that maybe Arsenal took it a little personally. Wenger was very pointed in his remarks all week long about how Arsenal are a bigger club, essentially, and they're the better team, and they're going to win, and yes, Spurs are good right now, but they've really not done anything yet, and they will, but they haven't done it yet. We sat here a few weeks ago talking about Arsenal and how the narrative around them is just wrong. Again, they win at home. This is their 11th consecutive win at the Emirates. It's become a real fortress. Shout out to Mark. that they're doing the job and they're getting it done. The first goal I thought was a little dubious. Obviously, the foul.
Yeah,
Sanchez
I wanted to
on
talk
Alex.
About that for sure.
Yeah,
right.
it was shady and shaky, but overall, I think the result was fair on both sides. Arsenal were just the better side on the day. And to get back to your point on Kane, this is where I wonder. And you're not going to like this because I'm going to take the player to task. Where he was injured, couldn't play against Manchester United, and they lost that match. And then he comes out and plays against Real Madrid like a man with his hair on fire, which is great, and I get it. This is a big match for him, for the club, for the history of the club. You're playing the biggest club in the world, essentially, in Real Madrid, so you want to get out there. He's not been the same since. And now you begin to wonder, was it worth it? Now, I get it that this is Champions League. They want to advance. Dortmund are a complete mess. APL is not making it through, obviously. So it's almost like a dead rubber. They could have played that essentially for a draw or just not gotten run off the pitch. Now Kane can't play fit, is drawn off after 70 minutes or so. He didn't play like a number.
Yeah, but he also played in the game before the international break
right.
as well. For so he played that Tuesday or Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And then he played the following Saturday, Sunday. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like he's super injured. I just don't think he's 100%.
He's not 100% and didn't play like the Harry Kane that we're used to seeing. I mean, I didn't see him dropping too far deep to get the ball. He wasn't playing his typical number 10. Now, do we put that to he's injured or do we put that to Arsenal's midfield? And I'm going to give Arsenal's midfield some credit here. They choked the life out of Spurs.
And one player that we've taken to task many times, Ozil, had a great game. He came back and defended a number of times, things you don't normally see from him. People were calling him the man of the match. I thought Mustafi was the man of the match in my book. He had the first goal. I do want to talk about the first goal because, I mean, we have to.
There was two wrongs on that goal.
Yeah, there were two wrongs. So Davinson Sanchez takes basically, if you look at Mike Dean, he does a tug on the shoulder, like basically
right.
saying, okay, Davinson Sanchez took out Alexis Sanchez, meaning that there's a legitimate foul here. You look at the replay, and I said it when I saw it live, I did not think that was a foul. It was not a foul, as we saw it again. And then on the kick itself, which Ozil takes, it's offsides for Mustafi. Great goal in the end in terms of like the neck flick and like getting the power that on it that he did going the opposite way of where it came. I thought it was a nice goal. I just didn't think it should never have happened.
Yeah, and where was Arsene Wenger after the game complaining about the quality and the level of officiating? I didn't hear him complaining about the level of officiating.
Well, I liked Mustafi's take at the end, which is basically like they felt right or wrong that they got the short end of the stick against City, and then they got the better end of it on Saturday. And his end was, you know what, it all comes out as a draw in the end. So you know what, you win some, you lose some. My hope is that VAR takes out the whole concept of, like, over the course of the season, you know, this will just be nullified. But, you know, we're not there yet.
And it would. I think the goal would be disallowed. I don't think it would be given under VAR. I think the evidence was clear enough. I'd like to point out that I thought Alexis Sanchez, who got the foul to set that free kick up, that man played possessed. He was out there calling for the ball, and some of that is the frustration that he shows when he doesn't get the ball is a little offsetting, I think, if you're a teammate and you're really trying and you see this guy being very dramatic out there trying to get the ball. We get it, man. We're trying to get you the ball. We're trying. But he played like a man on fire, and that goal against Lloris, I mean, Lloris was... He had nothing. There's nothing he could do. I mean, the players coming right at him with the ball and just fired it in. It was good to watch.
For the second one, I do want to talk about that one. Lacazette blasted in really hot. Alexis Sanchez, he basically traps it, if you look at it like again and again, on his calf. I think Lloris thought it was going to continue going to his right. Mm. The fact that it went back to his left, to Sanchez's right, then sets up the ball like basically right in front of Lloris. Lloris is leaning back because of it. There was actually a play later in the game where Lloris smothers a similar shot from Alexis Sanchez. I think that he just Lloris was not expecting that ball to come back to his left, and so he's leaning back because of it. At the same time, I mean, it was a nice goal. Sanchez put it one spot that Lloris had no chance, and that was in the roof of the net. I mean, that was
no. Lloris got wrong-footed, and Alexis Sanchez is going to look fabulous in sky blue come the winter.
So my question to you guys is: where does Tottenham go from here as to Arsenal? Because going into this game, like you said, you guys are doing really, Tottenham are doing really well in Champions League, as opposed to Arsenal that are kind of floating around and getting some good results, but in Europa. See, the way I see it is I think Tottenham are going to bounce back. They're going to be just fine. Arsenal, on the other hand, they did play this game with a lot of anger, and I think when they play like that, when they play that, they're unstoppable. But they're playing Burnley next week. Are they going to have the same kind of tempo against them? I think you guys are going to come back, bounce back from this game. I think you're going to trash Arsenal when you play at Wembley. When the next fixture comes around.
Yep.
But why do you think that? Again, this is where the narrative around Arsenal, I think, is a little poisoned because of
mistakes in the past. This year.
Well, they're right there in fifth or sixth, sure. just a point or two off of the top four, right? So there's a tight race there, 4, 5, 6.
Yeah, but this is a game that's in Burnley, which I think we got to give credit to Burnley. We'll get to them. Burnley are level on points with Arsenal. Granted, they've lost two games at home now.
Before we give 3 points to Burnley, I'd like to go back to a conversation that we were having off air, in that was this a bigger loss for Spurs or a bigger win for Arsenal?
I think it's a bigger win for Arsenal.
Nah. This is the reason
because
why...
the narrative has been now
Arsenal
that Arsenal...
have a point
that,
to prove.
That Tottenham have eclipsed Arsenal.
Right, and this is, and that's why I think it's a bigger loss for Spurs, because what Spurs has now consistently shown they struggle with is the psychology of playing as a favorite or playing as when you're expected to win. When they had the meltdown a couple years ago. You know, at the end of the season, and then now they're expected to win this game, and they come out almost completely flat. You know, to me, that would be, if I'm a Spurs supporter, I'm like, oh man, because the psychology of it is the difficult thing.
But I think really you could say is it's Tottenham versus the top six. They've had decent, I don't know, luck is the right word, but they've had decent results against Arsenal.
Against the top six.
And then the top six, it's been pretty bad.
It's been brutal.
It's been, so especially away.
This is where, again, the narrative becomes a little poisoned and we're not seeing a clear enough picture. Maybe Spurs aren't as good as we think they are, to me, because I keep thinking they're the best team in England. I don't think that anymore after this. This match showed to me that Spurs have a lot to prove, because injuries, yeah, they happen, but they happen to all of us, as we'll get to some other clubs. And it evens out. You're going to have to survive a brutal month or two here now where the matches are going to come fast, and you're going to be playing three matches potentially if you're in certain competitions, and it's going to be tough. And I really thought Spurs, if they get a draw out of that, there's no problem. You don't even think twice about it. It's a tough match at Emirates, where Arsenal have been tough to beat, and you're fine. You move on. But to get beat like they did, I thought they just
laid on.
Yeah, in the last like half an hour, they look like dead fish.
Yeah, but what I didn't like was the lineup from the start. Sissoko in the center. I know he plays well for France in that very same position, but Harry Winks, I thought, should have been there next to Dembele.
Yeah, and what did you think about Dembele? Because I go back to a point you made a week or so ago about Dembele being good for like an hour or so, you know, play every other week or whatever. Him starting that match, I was like, I wonder if Alex thinks that this is a little shaky here.
I actually like the fact that he was starting. He only played 62 minutes, so he's right on point with what I was saying earlier. They brought in Harry Winks for him. I thought that really... Well, I think in an ideal situation, Dyer would have been there next to Dembele or Winks, and Sissoko would not have been playing. But, you know, anyway, we're not going to talk about injuries and all that all day. So.
All right, guys. Don't forget, you're tuning into Blokes on the Bench here on 94.7. You can get in contact with us, 434-284-9470. Let us know how you feel if you're a Premier League fan. Also, just so everyone know, our Twitter page, we're running a quick show poll right now. It's BOTB. Soccer, which is Blokes on the Bench Twitter page. Please do follow us. Our quick poll question is, which club do you feel is definitely being relegated come May? All right, so we have Swansea, Everton, Crystal Palace, and West Ham. And right out in front right now with 37% is West Ham. And Kendall Marcus has left a comment saying, terrible start for the season. He doesn't leave a club name, so I'm guessing for all those four clubs. which, of course, it is, because they're in there, in that name there. But, yeah, West Ham, interestingly, there, out in front.
If your name is on that list, it's not a good season.
Yeah, that's not cool. I will say, this year feels like the first year in a while where like all four of these teams, you're just like, oh, this is bad.
Yeah,
like, this
how
is
really, are they here?
None of them, right? And you don't like they don't even really see, they're in such disarray. It doesn't even feel like any of them can kind of pull it. I mean, one of them right. has
well,
to.
I think
but,
the key is that none of the teams that have been promoted are in there.
Right.
And you would just assume that one of the three, mm-hmm. at least if not two of yep. the three, is down there.
And these four are established clubs.
Yeah.
And don't sleep on Crystal Palace. I mean, yes, they got off to an awful start, but they've had their new manager in for a little while. Benteke came back, although he didn't play very well this week against Everton. Crystal Palace got, and we'll get to this match, they didn't get a fair result. There was a really bad foul called in that match that was just stunning how the official was tricked into giving a penalty that Everton converted. I think Crystal Palace will make it through. That's who I'd put my money on.
But to go on what I was saying earlier is that the promoted teams are now 9th, 10th, and 11th. I'd be very curious to see when the last time, not as though we have instant stat checkers.
That would be, that would be interesting
to
find out.
If the lowest level of the promoted team was an 11th, and that's Newcastle.
I mean, and we don't even hear about, you listen to other, I mean, people aren't even really talking about any of those three teams potentially falling back into the relegation battle.
Well, Huddersfield's got a tough row coming up here, so we'll see. It's early days, but again, I think that the manager changes that the clubs have made are smart. I think Moyes can survive there at West Ham. He's only on 1 year contract, so he's done it May, regardless of what happens. I think
probably for the best.
But this could be his trampoline back into a consistent Premier League job if he has West Ham survive.
If he messes up, I think that's his career.
Then he's done.
Yeah, there's no more clubs for him in the Premier League.
Or any, he's Championship Charlie, as they were saying this afternoon.
All right. So moving on to your boys, Man City versus Leicester City versus Manchester City. Pass it over to you, City boys.
Yeah, so this was a dangerous match, one I thought we were going to potentially drop points in. Leicester play us really well. It's a system built to beat a possession side team like Manchester City. And with the speed they have, given the defenders we have, I was potentially worried about it. But we come through, although not unscathed, to say the least. John Stones is going to be out for a month to 6 weeks.
Right.
And those hamstring injuries tend to linger, which is a real shame because we've seen how much he's advanced his potential this year under Guardiola and for the England side as well. Thanks so much for playing those great international friendlies these last 2 weeks.
I'm sure any United fans saying the same thing. So Phil Jones go back down.
So who do you think is a reliable replacement for Stones?
There's no reliable replacement, and we have big matches coming up against Spurs and United in the course of the next few weeks, so I don't think there's anybody who's going to do the job consistently. Company is serviceable. He will make mistakes. He is injury-prone,
right.
So we'll come back to the show next week, and his leg fell off is what's going to happen. And you get what you can. I broke my old Company shirt out, and I was like, you know, I haven't worn this in so long. It's a shame.
Did it still fit?
It still fit. Yeah,
that's
actually
amazing.
It fit better than it ever did. But anyway, I thought we played really well against a team, a one-system team. Leicester have no plan B. They're just constantly trying to get the ball upfield.
Yeah.
Well, they're playing the counter.
They're playing the counter,
and that's the best way to play you guys, right?
It is, and they've beaten us pretty badly recently. Last year, 4-2, I think, is they really took us to the woodshed. But this year, the system is different. The players are more comfortable with it. Fabian Delph did a phenomenal job. Daniel, again, I think we need a little cut of him saying the fact that Fabian Delph is a good left back in the Premier League speaks just everything about
we
the fact.
We should just be able to cue that up.
We
like
should.
That initial
we should.
Time
well,
you
he's
said
right here,
that
actually.
Two or three weeks ago.
Look, I will. If Andy's going to be in the Troy Deeney, if the Andy's going to be the Troy Deeney fan club, I'll run the Fabian Delph.
Oh yeah,
club
yeah,
for now. Yeah, totally.
The Delph Troy Deeney kind of duo thing going on.
Yeah,
but it's interesting. We're talking about how Leicester City. We'll have to go to break in a second. How Leicester City are basically a one-trick pony in the sense that they are counter. Your second goal by De Bruyne came straight off a counter-attack.
Yeah, and City are able to counter.
You kind of played them at their own game.
Yeah, it's like a counter. I don't even know how to put it, and this is the brilliance of having a manager like Pep Guardiola in that he has trained these guys, and last year was a learning process, and that's why we failed on the fronts that we were fighting, where this year I think we'll find some success.
But when we come back, we're going to talk about that Company should have been red card.
All right, guys, the time is 20 past 6. We'll be right back. All right, guys, you're listening to Blokes on the Bench. Welcome back. So you were talking...
So, I mean, what, 50 seconds into the game? Whatever it was? Or it was,
it was
maybe not 50
after.
Seconds.
Yeah,
it was
just after a minute.
It was super early into the match. Through ball comes in. Company slides to get the ball, except Vardy's there. That's a red in my book. Because if you look at where he is, maybe Stones is level with him, but from an angle to the goal, I didn't think that Stones had the angle to catch up to Vardy.
Yeah, we talked about this before. I think the presence of Stones bails out the official in that situation.
But Stones is what? I mean, like
he's probably, I don't know, 3 or 4 yards away, but he's moving in that direction. Like the way that the law is written, it gives the referee a decision to make. Like if Stones isn't there, there's not even a decision. It has to be a red card. And the other thing is, so now he has to make a decision, and we're in the second minute of the match. Like no referee wants to give a red card in the second minute of a match. So I think he deferred to sort of, you know, keep the game.
A more lenient
card,
a yellow.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I mean, because it could have been a red card. I mean, if it had been a red card, I don't think you'd have an argument. I don't think anybody could say, well, it should not have been a red card. But he could have given him a yellow.
But you as a referee, not in soccer, but in general, the letter of the law is that you have to be, if you are beyond the last man, then it's a red card if there's a tackle in a situation like that. Now, how do you interpret that when there's like the whole angle concept?
I'm not a soccer official, so I don't know, but I was listening to another show, and they had an official talking about, a former official talking about it, saying that it's one of those things where it just gives you the opportunity to say, oh, there was somebody there. You know, not necessarily.
Even if they didn't necessarily have the angle to
right,
catch
to
up.
Catch,
I mean, because
right,
Vardy is
them.
One of the
right,
fastest
exactly.
players
no, he,
in
Stones
the
was
Premier
not catching
League.
Vardy. Yeah. There's no way. No.
I thought it was dead red, and I was stunned to hear the pundit on the show saying that it's not, the referee got it right. And I was like, how is that possible? And then they even came back from half, and they were like, the ref got it right. So I'll defer to that. I'm not an official, and I don't understand that world. Daniel, I respect your chosen career path of being an official, but I don't...
Well, ex career path, right?
I don't know what it takes in someone's brain to say I'm going to be an official.
But let's talk about that KDB goal. Let's not all be negative about...
Oh, City
this.
Had plenty on display. I mean, you could see De Bruyne moving all throughout the pitch. He was on the left, he was in the middle, he was on the right. Just constant flow, and then his thunder strike on his left foot just... I mean, I leapt out of my seat, and I can't imagine what supporters in the stadium must have felt. That electricity, when you see something that is so singular like that, De Bruyne's goal, it's just that's a highlight. You know, that's going to be on our end of season highlights.
Was that the goal of the week? Because there were a few other ones that
were
pretty nice.
There were some pretty nice ones, but I guess I'm a little jaundiced in saying that I thought it was best as a City supporter. I see the quality in some other goals that were scored this week, but De Bruyne's, it just came, and it came at a moment just out of the blue, kind of. You're like, okay, he's running forward, and wow. And speaking of this, a point that I'd like to bring up is that this was De Bruyne's 50th involvement in a Premier League goal in his career. Now, obviously, he played a little bit for Chelsea, but this was he's scored 16 goals, and he's assisted on 34 in his Premier League career. That's the quickest pace in 76 games of any midfielder in Premier League history. So this kid is really showing Chelsea... I don't know what they were thinking in letting him go. I don't know what Wolfsburg, frankly, was thinking in letting him go, because
how much did you guys buy him for?
Mid-50s?
I thought it was 60.
He said he's
yeah,
the
that's
city's,
big money. That's yeah, big money.
Well, is it big money considering how much a player like Paul Pogba cost? Because I'd take De Bruyne over Pogba any day. And I don't care.
I'd love to see a debate on that one.
Oh, no, 100%. De Bruyne has been worth every penny. One of the things that De Bruyne has done for City is he's become the architect that David Silva had to be previously. And now, because De Bruyne can be the person through whom most of the play goes, Silva's able to roam a little bit more. Silva's able to be even more creative. Silva's able to pick his spots. He almost scored in this game. You know, it's actually, and especially as David Silva gets a little bit older and everything slows down a little bit for him, I think it's going to extend David Silva's career, honestly, having De Bruyne there.
Yeah, well, and the rotation of the squad. I
right,
think
it helps.
Him.
And we have Bernardo Silva. We have so many attacking mids that can take that. David Silva had a great international break this week as well. He finished his chances with Spain. I don't know why he can't finish them with City. If he did, I mean, he'd probably score 12 to 15 goals a year.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about that goal. We've got a poll going on. The Blokes on the Bench Soccer.
BOTB Soccer. That's the Twitter page.
Yeah, we got a Blokes on the Bench Soccer poll going on right now. Who had the best goal of the week? We had the Man City KDB goal. Burnley, Barnes had a really nice one.
Burnley getting no love right now.
No love with 0%. Salah with 11%. Hazard with 45%. 1% more than KDB. Look, that may be a rounding error. I'm not sure.
I liked the Salah goal. I really like Mo Salah. But the reason why I voted for the KDB goal is because that was technically
KDB's. We got some in-voting going on here.
Well, yeah.
I voted for the Hazard goal.
That was a better team goal.
That's what it was.
But KDB's goal was technically on his weaker, quote unquote, left foot, and he put it on that foot. It wasn't like he had to, but you know, he looks at the goal, he sees two defenders in front of him, switches to the left foot, and then fired that thing into the corner.
All right, guys, don't forget you're listening to Blokes on the Bench here in 94.7. We have to move on. So the next game was West Brom versus Chelsea. Chelsea, nobody's really talking about Chelsea this year. Everyone's talking about the Manchester, like the two Manchester teams. Obviously, City being the one that most people are talking about. I don't think United have a hope. But Chelsea are sneaking up in the background.
I think Chelsea would love it. I think Chelsea would love it.
Yeah, exactly. The pressure is off them.
Right, but Spurs getting caught out this week, I think now Chelsea become that London club where, you know what, they are defending champions, and yes, they're dealing with Champions League as a front, which they didn't have to deal with last year, but I think they're a better side this year. Even though Matic is gone, I still think that they've got something really going there. And
especially with Hazard and like Morata.
Well, that front too, the 3-5-2 that they played, that's dangerous. Hazard, he's been obviously one of the best midfielders in the world, but now that he's playing even more forward and they're getting him the ball, and him and Morata have this really nice partnership with each other.
Well, Morata's getting assists, which is something that Diego Costa didn't really do. Diego Costa was a poacher. He would mostly score for himself, maybe a little bit of hold-up play.
He ain't trying to pass the ball to anybody.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's kind of a ball hawk and kind of a very me-first kind of player and like as a person. And you can see, basically, he is who he is on the pitch, off the pitch. Anyway, the whole point, though, is that Morata has become, him and Hazard are doing great. I mean, the number of, like, passes and assists going back and forth, it's really impressive.
But Morata's been this way everywhere he's been when he's had the chance to play at Juve, at Madrid. He's been this way. I wanted City to sign him when they were after Sanchez. I wanted City to sign Morata.
Yeah, but come on.
With all that money, we can do it.
Either that or Danilo? Yeah, I think you'd rather have Morata for sure.
Yes, that's true. But it does. Chelsea is a dangerous side. I've said this in previous weeks, and I'll say it again. Conte has to stay healthy. When he's in the side, it makes a tremendous difference because it completely transforms that midfield, and it also transforms their ability to link from back to front and to get turnovers. And that's without him, they struggle much more.
And to also bring in the opponent in this match, which we haven't even mentioned, in West Brom, it's a dreadful showing. Fans were leaving the stands after 30 minutes or so. They're only 1 point off the drop, so they should be included in the relegation discussion.
Yeah, and we've been talking about them a little bit as a team. Pulis, you know what? We wouldn't mind seeing them go down. This is now an 11 in a row that they've lost, including the cup loss to City. They are. Like, West Brom are looking as bad as any team out there, I think, right now.
Yeah, they're dire. It's dire there.
See, the thing with West Brom is, in days of old, Pulis was seen as the manager that could bring you up and keep you somewhere, but they're obviously going down in the wrong direction. I think he's probably the next manager that's going to get canned. Who replaces him?
Big Sam.
You think Big Sam would go to West Brom?
I don't think it, but I think his name is going to be the first name brought out for any club that's in a relegation battle. What's interesting is to have a manager like Pulis involved in a relegation battle, because he would be the guy who you call to come in and save the day, and here it is. This is on him, and it's not as if West Brom haven't spent money. It's not as if they don't have talent on that team. I think a manager who specializes in saving teams from the drop, the act may get old after a little while, West Brom are just treading water, and now the oceans have gotten a little deep.
I would love to see Pulis leave there, go to somewhere else. Oh, I don't know, let's say like a Stoke City and save them or something like that. Somewhere that he's been before. But I want to talk about Fabregas as well. I mean, Chelsea had a great game for sure. But I think we have to remember who's pulling the strings from behind the scenes. And that's the thing, is it's like a Modric kind of player. Fabregas had two assists and a hockey assist. The goal that he had, the goal that he had to
Marcus Alonso.
Alonso,
it's ridiculous. Like, that's, I mean, that's the just, pass, that should be on the list of goals of the
week. That goal was incredible. I mean, it was like
the angle he puts that in on net. I'm like,
and he roofs it.
Wait
amazing.
A minute, how's that possible? Beautiful goal.
Granted, it was on his left, his favorite left. You know.
Well, it's interesting to me because Fabregas was awful last season. Like, they were stringing together highlights of Fabregas kicking passes to nothing.
I think
like
Fabregas was really bad in the first half of the season.
Right. And
then
he
came on in the second half,
right,
which is why they thought they could sell Matic.
Right, exactly. But he's shown that it wasn't...
He's back.
He's back. Yes, exactly.
I mean,
and that makes a big difference.
He is the Fabregas
again
that we remember at Barcelona, that we remember at Arsenal. He is who we think he is. I mean, he's as good as any midfielder in the world right now. And he's playing a little deeper, which I think is even better for him. His passes are going for longer distances. You know, you could argue that he's more important to that team right now than everyone's favorite, Kante.
Mm-hmm. There's no more important player in the world. There's no more important person in the world than N'Golo Kante. How dare you?
Important person. Wow. All right. Let's not talk about anything else than just football, because
what's the saying? Water covers 70% of the earth, and N'Golo Kante covers the rest.
I love it. I love
just,
it.
Just a quick thing though about our Twitter poll about what clubs are being relegated. Kendall Marcus had said terrible start to the season. He retweeted saying that I forgot to say he was talking about Crystal Palace. Mm. So, it's still 42% out there with West Ham. So it's still
obviously it's a bad start for Crystal Palace. I mean, they're at the bottom of the table, but they had injury issues, and we should probably get to that match because they're really hard done. They should have 3 points out of that match, not only the one.
All right, so let's move on to the Liverpool versus Southampton game,
or that one.
Oh, this one, yeah. I'm going on.
What a segue! What a segue!
I've got them all wrote down here. So the Salah
He's
machine
very,
continues.
Very rigid.
I know. Got it in front of me. We go in this order. No, yeah, the Liverpool game. Salah obviously continuing with his goal streak, just being Salah. Are Liverpool contenders this year? Or
contender for what? I think is what you need. A contender for the Champions League for sure. For the league,
it's too late for anyone that far down.
I know it's about too late. It's about their defense.
So they beat a terrible team in Southampton 3-0, and I could hear the cheers from Random Row going on with that Liverpool group just going nuts. Yeah, great win, great result, one at home. Anfield's becoming a fortress as well. But Southampton are dire. That is a club that has just lost the plot completely. They had no goals, no shots on goal in that match. They had nothing going for them, and obviously Liverpool are a better side, but when you get a good side against a really bad side, it shows. And this to me wasn't so much about Liverpool as it was that there needs to be a change at Southampton. I don't know if the manager's going to change because he just came in, but the talent is there's something wrong.
Only one win in their last seven for Southampton right now, beating West Brom, who are equally as horrible. Actually, not equally. West Brom are worse. Let's say it how it is.
Unfortunately, there's only four options with the relegation thing in the poll, so or else I would have just added about another four teams.
We could have done like half of the bottom half of the table. I mean, there are a lot of teams that do not look very promising this year. That's why if you are a Crystal Palace fan or a West Ham fan or any of these clubs that are in the bottom three, you have hope because there's a lot of teams that just aren't very good this year. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, back to Salah real quick. That has to be one of the best signings of the offseason.
Right.
I mean, it's got to be. I knew, again, he was at Roma, so I knew the quality that he brought. I still think Liverpool's going to have to deal with some stretch of time where he's injured. Because
his MO?
That's kind of been his MO.
Where did he? Was he with Chelsea?
He was with Chelsea, yes, and then he went to Fiorentina.
Right, he was a loanee. He was one of the bajillion players that Chelsea has on loan. And then
that's a money-making machine, all that is.
Yeah, exactly. And my dad, actually, huge Spurs fan as well, he's been telling me this for months now. He's like, we should have signed Salah. We should have signed Salah. Granted, Goma, we're Egyptian. This is our heritage.
I think that that Sané and Salah are just Mané. I keep doing that. Sadio Mané and Salah are incredible. If both of those guys are on the pitch at the same time, Liverpool are as dangerous of a club in the world. But I think the time to sell Coutinho is so overdue because they've survived without him. And yes, he is really good when he wants to be, and he had a great match. He could have had two goals in this match, maybe more. But I really look at that side and like, you know, there's $100 million sitting on the table from Barcelona for this guy.
150 maybe.
Whatever. You know, like this is, you're not going to get a better price to sell a player who, as good as he is, this is the time to cash in and build around Salah and Mane. Those guys are awesome. Get some defenders, because that's ultimately what Liverpool's issue is going to be. They just don't know how to defend well. I mean, they have a few guys who are quality.
Lovren's horrible.
I know.
I wouldn't.
I mean, okay.
That's what I meant.
Like, you know, and Klavan and everyone else that they have, and all of their defenders. I think that their wingbacks are halfway decent, but their four central defenders are as bad as any team in the Premier League.
Yeah, that's definitely a major black eye on Jurgen Klopp's resume, that they haven't done anything with the back line.
Well,
he
claims that it's in good shape. He sold Sacco saying, I feel confident in the four that I have. And then you look at the four that he has.
Because you can't say, guys, we're screwed. I don't know what we're going to do here. Like, you have to say
that. Just walk in the locker room and, like, right, shrug exactly. your shoulders. All right, guys, no, we're done.
Right, because, I mean, those players are in your locker room. You can't be like, look, these guys are pretty bad.
You know who they
know.
Should be playing is Joe Gomez. That dude is legit. If you watched the games, the international games, I think maybe not the international games. This guy has promise. Not the international games, sorry. But this guy has promise. This guy is legit. It may have been in the international games, I forget.
See, if I'm a Liverpool supporter, the one thing I would be concerned, well, besides the defense, one thing I'd be concerned with is they tend to spend a lot of time sort of waiting for a moment of brilliance from either Mane or Salah, who are both more than capable of delivering it, before they really do any, like, I don't always get the sense from them that, like, they're building towards goals, that they're playing some sort of system that's going to create goals. They're really waiting for moments of individual brilliance to deliver goals,
so
which I think could be a problem.
You think there's less team play, and that's interesting, because I think if you ask Klopp what kind of game he would want to play, it'd be that kind of pass it in the back of the net kind of goal. But that's not what they're getting.
Right, exactly. Like, they're not the type of team that's going to break other teams down, and that's where they've struggled. Is in you know, another team sits back and they have to organize and break a team down. They don't really do that so well. And then, you know, in this game, like, you know, not a whole lot is going on, and all of a sudden Salah comes out and, you know, curls one beautifully into the far corner. And then, you know, the floodgates start to open.
Mm-hmm. And Coutinho found Salah for the second goal as well, which was, you know, Hoyt was caught napping, I thought. Maybe he thought he was offsides, but, you know, Coutinho is contributing to this team. I do think that if Coutinho leaves, it'll be a loss.
Right.
I just don't think it'll be a 100-and-whatever million loss.
Agreed. He's Mane is much more important than Coutinho to that squad.
And if you listen to the talk that's happening now, is that Eriksen may be the guy that Barcelona want over Coutinho.
All right, guys. The time is 6:40. We'll be right back. All right, guys. We're back. All right, so let's move on to the next game. It was, if I can find it, Crystal Palace versus Everton. I was going into this thinking this could be a dinosaur fixture, because this, you know, next season, just because these two teams don't look great at the minute. But it was surprisingly pretty good.
For me, I feel like whenever Crystal Palace are playing against anybody, it's, you know what it is? That's a game on the second TV. That's immediately going
that's
to the second
true.
TV.
I agree with that.
Because you know they're going to score, and you know they're going to give up goals. It's going to be fun, and that's what this one was.
It's must-see TV. It would be NBA Pass TV if you get that analogy. But I thought that Crystal Palace and Everton both, they're both looking at the drop. So anytime you're going to get matches like this, you have to watch it.
It was a six-pointer.
It was great. And Crystal Palace are hard done on a terrible, terrible, terrible call that I don't know that a video assistant would help change, but a penalty was given unfairly to Everton early in the match, and that made it 1-1. But
what will potentially impact that is the fact that there's this new law in the Premier League. So just to kind of elaborate on what Christian's talking about, there was a penalty that should not have been given. Nias went down extremely easily on a Scott Dan.
Not even touched.
He may have touched his shoulder, but like it looked as though, like, if you saw his reaction, it was like he hit him in the face mm-hmm. with his elbow. It looked horrible from a, you know, theatrical perspective. It was not that. And then, of course, they get the PK. Leighton Baines buries it 1-1. But really what the new thing is with the Premier League is that they will look at that and they could potentially ban Nias for, is it two, three games?
Right, yeah, for the dive.
For the dive.
Yeah.
Which was, it was a horrible dive. It's as bad as they get. It's atrocious.
He would be the first player to receive that ban, right?
He would be, exactly. Which is, it's kind of weird. It's like you only get the ban if a penalty is given. What if you dive and you do something horrible and the referee disallows it? It's like, I think you should still be banned to some degree, maybe not as many games.
Right. Well, as bad as I thought that Palace was done in, they turned the ball over to Everton on the second goal for Everton, and it was just a complete disaster. So maybe Palace deserved their fate for that match because it was Keystone Cop stuff.
So talking about Everton, does anyone think that Marco Silva is heading there? Because I know that there's talk,
because Watford like refuses to let him go. They are holding on to him like death. I mean, they have the real death grip on Marco Silva
right now.
Which is
smart. I mean,
Watford, maybe not smart for.
What's Marco Silva done? Marco Silva's been around for all of, I think, 20 or 30 Premier League matches. He's done very little. He wears a really tight shirt. That's about all he's done that I can remember. But, you know, good on Watford to hold on to him for as long as they possibly can. I think it's 13 million the number is, and supposedly Everton are coming this week again with another number. But I don't know that that's going to make any difference.
Okay.
I don't think Watford's going to let him go.
They shouldn't even let him talk to him. It doesn't make any sense. What do you gain? 13 million?
Watford is brutal with their managers. So this is their theory.
They finally got the guy.
Or they've got 13 to 15 million euro to.
Yeah, but what is it? What do you get if you stay up?
I think they'd stay. I think they'd stay up regardless, honestly.
All right. Need to move on. Burnley versus Swansea.
Burnley, I've been loving this team all year and really last year as well. Really, because I thought that last year they were all about what they could do on the set piece, and they were winning a lot of games because of what they could do on the set piece. This year, they don't even need the set piece. They're not like a home team only, which is what they were last year. The first goal was fantastic.
Right. So we talk about these thunder strikes that happen. That was a team goal as team goals get. I mean, it's just absolutely beautiful. Jack Cork scored that, right? Mm-hmm. Just to me, that was the highlight of the week. I mean,
what about Ashley Barnes' goal?
Well, there's your thunder strike, right?
Yeah.
But a team play to me is where you really see the beautiful game show itself off.
And Swansea everybody in a lot of trouble.
A lot of trouble.
All right, so let's move on again.
But let's just quickly talk about Wilfred Bonny. That shot that he took.
Still,
how many
still
rows
in orbit.
Up?
It's still in orbit. It hasn't come down.
How far off was that?
Yeah, someone needs to gift that.
That was unbelievable.
All right, Bournemouth versus Huddersfield. This was a 4-0 stomping.
Callum Wilson, the first English player to score a hat trick in the Premier League.
Imagine if you had him in your fantasy team this weekend.
I was really pleased.
Triple captained him.
I like Callum Wilson. I don't know why. I like the Cherries. I like the Fighting Cherries. They're like my secondary team. But I like Callum Wilson. And I was glad to see him come back this week because he was really bad when he came back in his debut 2 weeks ago. Like he looked really lost. It looked bad. So to see him get on the score sheet to get a hat trick, that was really cool.
He's coming off a serious injury, too, so it's going to take time.
Yeah, good for him. But that stat you said, he's the first English player to score a hat trick. Kane hasn't scored
in the Premier League.
Scored one in, I guess it was the Champions League.
Right.
Okay, yeah, okay. Maybe that's true. I don't know. Let's check
fact
the tape
check
on
me.
That. Yeah.
I double-checked that because I immediately was like, wait, I remember Kane scored a hat trick, but he didn't do it in the Premier League.
Fair enough.
All right, so moving on to Manchester United versus Newcastle.
Oh, boy.
This is what happens when Pogba comes back.
Mm. You guys have been missing him for sure.
That swagger he brings on the pitch. I mean, we talked about Zlatan, but the swagger that Paul Pogba has, those schoolboy tricks that he just uses on the pitch.
You got to have swagger to wear that red streak in your hair.
And the red and the white.
I know, yeah.
I know some people have criticized him for his defensive play, but he's not a he's more. They bought him for his creative play, and it showed.
Well, I'm going to take him down a little bit, only in that celebration of his goal, which
that was terrible.
Was all made.
Was a rodeo kind of. Whoa.
If you go back and look at the highlight, Marcus Rashford busts his, you know what, getting up the pitch to get ready to be on the far post to knock it down.
Beautiful
header. He comes back from like 30, 40 yards. He is booking downfield, and then I'm like, yeah, you knocked it down into the... The first thing I do is I run over to Rashford and tackle him to the ground and hug him. You made the goal. I just was the dummy standing there that bounced the ball into the net.
And that was a Lukaku sighting for the first time in a while for United. Lukaku with a nice cross in to Rashford, who heads it down for Pogba just to tap it in. It was like, okay, Lukaku's back. Okay, he scored two goals for Belgium. Maybe this guy can do something. And then he gets one in garbage time, which is what he excels at earlier
in the year. Goal was something else, right? A little stutter step on the keeper, freezes him completely, and then shatters it into the
top
of the net.
First question I'm asking is, what is Lejeune doing? He jumped in the air, and it's like, why? I'm not really sure what he's doing. And that was more of a gift, I thought, than anything else. Yes, it was a fantastic finish to the roof of the net. No doubt any keeper would have saved that. At the same time, it was a gift. That was a gift. Hey, but you know what? When you're up 3-1, you know, you're just trying to make plays, and Lejeune obviously didn't make one there.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Please, go ahead. You're the United supporter. What did you think?
I mean, obviously, looking back in the game now, I'm happy. But, you know, at the start, Newcastle get the goal. Gayle got the goal. Per defending again.
First goal slipping. Anyone has scored in Old Trafford all year.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
With an assist from everyone's boy here, DeAndre Yedlin.
He made up for on giving up the goal later.
Right.
Yeah, but I mean, apparently he can only jump about 3 inches.
Yeah,
but it was poor defending. If you watch the video replay, like Lindelof slips. It's just really poor defending. And I'm going, okay. But then I thought, you know, I don't know. There was a feeling inside of me, we're going to win this. We have to win this. We have to come back. And the patience, like, it started showing, and Pogba just playing around when he comes into the box, the little teeny, I can't even describe it, like, it's a perfect ball into Martial. And that's what I'm talking about, Pogba.
The creativity has been missing for you guys.
Right.
There's only a few players you have on your team that can do that. A lot of them have pace, a lot of them can finish it, but a lot of them don't necessarily have that ability to create an assist. Mata is the other guy. He was also on the field. I thought you had one of your most creative potential teams on the field. I thought that United looked really, really good. I think that they clearly have been missing Pogba.
Mm-hmm.
When you hear Mourinho speak, he's been saying the exact same thing, even though if you hear other things, he says, I'm not going to talk about injuries, and then he clearly talks about injuries. But, I mean, Lassell on the other side for Newcastle, they're missing their captain, you know. The injuries are on all sides of the field at this point. I was really surprised that Zlatan was even on the bench. I thought that Zlatan would not even get a thought of a run out onto the field until December. And then here he is, first time he's on in the squad, he's playing. He played for like a few minutes, right?
Yeah, and not only that, but now you have to look at him as an option in the Champions League as well when they alter their rosters come January, I believe.
Mm.
So I would imagine that as long as he's healthy, he's really going to impact them in Europe as well as England. So United, the title chase really is going to focus in on Manchester over the next 2 months, with Chelsea still hanging around and Spurs and Arsenal still making some noise. But all of a sudden, United are scary. And yeah, they're 8 points behind. There's some good distance there. But again, this is the time of the year where things start to equal out and teams get closer to one another. And I think United are poised to make a real run at this.
United are scary. But I think that Mourinho has some scary options and some scary egos to deal with.
Mm.
Lukaku, Zlatan.
Do you play both of them up front?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what do you do there? How do you manage this?
There's no way that the two of them can play with each other. Because as I've argued on the show multiple times, the front three of Manchester United need to be Lukaku, Martial, and Rashford. Those three guys work in such great harmony. Now, Martial has shown absolute skill coming off the bench and changing things up for them, but they're not set up as a two-striker side. They did a lot of crossing into the box, though, so maybe they will go back to more of a 4-4-2. I mean, very English style of football, a lot of crosses coming in, and you put some big bodies in the box that the Manchester United obviously can with those guys. And Fellaini, I mean, whenever he comes back.
Could they not play him behind Zlatan, behind Lukaku?
Mata is? Is that what you're saying?
Kind of, yeah.
This is what...
Because he needs to be... I think he's more of a poacher scorer.
In this squad, though, this is where Zlatan is the double-edged sword, because you want him to be good, but when he, if he becomes the Zlatan of old, it now disrupts your entire squad, because if you take Lukaku out and his confidence dips, you might not see that guy again for 3 months.
And he may make a big fuss in the locker room and take the whole team down with him. And I think that that's what Mourinho has to battle here, is two egos. One is a player that has been one of the best players the last 15, 20 years in Europe in Zlatan Ibrahimovic, and Lukaku, who's been one of the best players in the last 5 years and has everything in front of him. What do you do? Do you play the young buck, or do you play the old stallion? I don't know.
There's not even a debate. Lukaku is out there for me 90% of the time, and you rotate the squad every once in a while and let Abramovich take on the cup matches. I mean, here or there.
I think I'm with you on that. I think that the Mourinho has some luck in that with December and the Christmas like fixtures that are going to come up, where you're playing 2-3 matches in a week. I think you can play every other. You can play each one back and forth, and then in the new year, you've got to make a run in the Champions League. And if United go out early, I think that they're going to be in some major trouble with that locker room. But you know what? If I'm a United fan, it's all smiles right now.
The one positive thing is Ibra and Mourinho have a very good relationship going back a long way, and they have a great deal of respect for each other. So if there's anybody that can control Ibra, it would be Mourinho.
Right.
It's great to have options, right? I mean,
sure,
people get hurt, but yeah. I just don't see how the two of them can play together. They'd have to alter their system or, again, go to a 4-4-2 or a 3-5-2.
But this is what we've said also about City with Jesus
and
Aguero playing together, and they have played together, and they played together well.
But the egos there are a lot different than they are. I mean, Jesus is still as accomplished as he is. He's only 20. I mean, he's just beginning. There is no ego with this kid. He's deferring to Aguero, who is the.
But I think my point here is that if I think you can play both up top, most likely in situations where you're playing against a team that's, you know, like a West Brom or Palace.
Rashford goes to the bench?
No, you can play Rashford or Martial on the right, and you play that 4-4-2. You play an incredibly attacking lineup. You pull Mata out. You play Matic, and you play Pogba in the center. And you're basically playing the same squad as you are now. It's just Mata out.
I could see Martial playing wide because that's the kind of player he is, but I don't know if Rashford's got
Rashford,
that kind of player. I don't know. I mean, I'm a big fan.
He pinches in. I mean, he definitely pinches in, but I think that he can bring a cross in as well. I'm saying it's an option. I'm not saying that's your number one start. You know, that's the way you should line up in your biggest matches of the week or month or year.
On that, we have to leave that game. Going on the last game, Watford versus West Ham. We actually have a game tomorrow as well. But I'll get to that. But just
let's all go out drinking for that one tomorrow.
All right, so
Watford
versus West Ham. West Ham.
Moyes' 500th match in the Premier League, and he's off to a great start.
If he can get 500, one of us can get 500. Right?
I totally agree.
West Ham's a disaster. Like that's just, it's bad there. And nobody's excited about David Moyes being there, and from what I can tell from West Ham supporters.
No, none of them were enthusiastic. None of us were. Everyone's still scratching their head as to why you're going to make that move. Okay, sure. Get rid of Bilic.
Right.
I think no one's debating. Well, some people are debating that. I thought maybe you could have a little bit more time. But if you're going to do it, bring in someone that's going to motivate me, that's going to give me something.
Yes, exactly.
He doesn't even sound confident when he talks. And he keeps saying, I saw the interview with him, he's like, we're going to try to win the game. I'm going to try to win the games? I want to win the games. Yeah, we're going to put the team up and we're going to win. And he kept referring to the players as they. Well, they didn't play well. No, it's we. We didn't play well. Stop.
You're saying everything. That's the stuff that those guys in the locker room are going to hold on to. Come this week, next week, and as things continue to go south, which it clearly looks like they're going to, I wouldn't be surprised if this is like a Swansea situation of last year. I think that, what's the old Bradley? He may have a run for someone going for the shortest managerial stay ever. I don't know how many days it was. It was like 45 days or something like that. I don't even remember, but it was not long, And I don't see Moyes staying past 2018. See you later, buddy.
The other thing that jumped out to me in this match is, look, I'm a City supporter. Joe Hart will always have a special place in my heart in the history of Manchester City, but that dude is done. Like, that guy is done. I don't even know if he can really be a starter in the Premier League. I mean, he's going to start for West
but
Ham.
See, I think that's a little harsh, because I saw, I mean, yes, I'm not saying he had a good game here. Everyone has good games, bad games. But there was a few weeks ago I saw Crystal Palace, West Ham, and he was making saves left and right.
Yeah, but like that second goal.
But he's inconsistent.
Second goal, he looked like a deer in headlights as it was coming towards him. It beats him low. He gets a hand on it. It still gets past him. Like, Joe Hart doesn't do that, you know, 4 years ago, 5 years ago.
Mm. All right, actually, he did. That's why everyone in England hates him.
Only for England, though.
Yeah. All right. So tomorrow, Brighton versus Stoke. What are our predictions? What's going on there? Stoke maybe to pull a result?
Well, I think the key for that game is, where is it being played?
Oh, it's at Brighton.
And it's in Brighton. And that, I think, is the key. Because
the Amex Stadium.
Beautiful park. Beautiful.
I think all of us
great
would have said, you know, the most likely winner would have been whoever's at home, right? Like, Stoke is a tough place to play. Brighton have turned out to be a pretty tough place to play. I mean, I would see this being either a Brighton win or a Stoke or a draw. I mean, I don't see Stoke winning it unless Peter Crouch comes out of nowhere and 80th minute header kind of thing.
All right, guys. So just a quick update on our Twitter, which is BOTB Soccer. So we did ask the goal of the week. Man City, which was Kevin De Bruyne, Burnley's Barnes, Liverpool Salah, or Chelsea Hazard, and Hazard is just pushed out with 45%. And the poll closed on which club do you think is going down in May, and West Ham is out there in 38%. So most people think West Ham, I guess. Which
there you go.
I would have thought more Crystal Palace, but
I think they have a hope. But also this week, not only do we have Premier League next weekend, we've got some Champions League fixtures
and MLS Conference Champions this week. Come on. Tuesday night.
Yeah. Go for it, Christian. I know you've been
I'll
studying
be there
up.
Watching paint dry.
What? I mean, like, what? Well, I think the big thing is that Columbus Crew are actually in the Eastern Conference Finals against Toronto. I mean,
right.
And
the
people
MLS
are talking about them potentially being moved.
All right, guys. The time is 7 o'clock. We will see you next week. I'm Andy.
Alex.
I'm Daniel.
Christian.
Take care, guys.
You've been listening to Blokes on the Bench with your host, Andy Richardson, on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. Join us again next Sunday at 6 for another edition, and feed us back at facebook.com/blokesonthebench.